And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is nightmares. Each of my guests is discussing a topic that some would consider a nightmare, whether it is night terrors, the Occupy Wall Street movement, or the road to economic collapse. My next guest is a conservative British journalist, an author, and a politician who is currently a member of the European Parliament. We'll discuss his dire warning to America in his latest book, The New Road to Serfdom. And if you have questions or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Daniel Hannan is a British journalist, an author, a politician representing Southeast England for the Conservative Party and the European Conservatives and Reformist political group. He is also the Secretary General of the Alliance of European Conservatives and Reformists. Daniel was first elected to the European Parliament way back in 1999. He was expelled from the European People's Party and the European Democrats Party back in 2008. After which he sat as a non-insertist. Daniel joined the ECR and his conservative colleagues when it was formed back in 2009. He became Secretary General of its sister Euro party, the AECR. Daniel is a Eurosceptic and a unionist, and he is strongly critical of the European integration. Joining us from Brussels, Belgium. Hi, Daniel. How are you this evening?
Hi, Billy. Well, I think you pretty much said everything that needs saying there. So it's been a great interview, and I hope to be on again sometime.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Now, actually, there's quite a bit to cover with you, and I loved your book, The New Road to Freedom. I find it's interesting that it takes a fresh perspective like yours, somebody outside of the United States, to really see what's going on. And that's currently the case with us today. I mean, you understand American politics better than some of our own politicians. So what do you as an outsider, Daniel, see that makes America so great, and what disturbing trends are you seeing right now that might change that for the worse?
Well, I suppose it's human nature to take for granted the things that we are familiar with. When I was researching this book, I traveled around all over the U.S. and I spoke to different people, not just the politicians and journalists, but I got out and about, and the same thought kept hitting me everywhere I went, which is most Americans don't realize how lucky they are. You've got, despite the fact that we all whinge about things and it's human nature to complain, you've got an incredibly good, responsive political system. And there are a lot of features of it that are absolutely unique and that no other democracy really has. Primaries to elect your candidates, the direct election of everyone from the sheriff to the school board to the DA, the way in which you have this devolution of power, the state's rights, the localism, the referendum and ballot procedures, the balanced budget amendments. There's a whole series of mechanisms that are designed to keep the government restrained and to make sure that the citizen is commensurately powerful. And those are incredibly precious. They're a great heritage that go right back to the Constitution. And when I see those things being scorned, being endangered, then I, not just as a friend of America and a kinsman of yours, but as a citizen of the world, I worry, because the world depends on a strong, prosperous, and free United States.
Well, that it does. Certainly we are the leaders in so many areas. But where do you see us moving perhaps in the wrong direction, Daniel?
Well, when I look at the policies being pursued by your present rulers, they amount to a comprehensive package of Europeanization, European social policy, European tax levels, European unemployment levels, European daycare, European college education, European disarmament, European green taxes and carbon duties and so on. You know, these are not a series of random initiatives that just happen all to be being pursued at the same time. They are a sustained attempt to turn your country into a different kind of country. Now, as you said when you were introducing me, Billy, I've been a member of the European Parliament for 12 years now, nearly 13. I've observed at first hand the future towards which your present rulers are taking you, and believe me, my friends, you're not going to like it.
Well, some of us already don't like it, that is for sure, Daniel. But now, in your book, I loved your book because it was a play on F.A. Hayek's 1944 classic book, The Road to Serfdom. Why did you write an update to the classic book? I mean, wasn't the book in and of itself good enough for readers to read?
Well, things have changed a lot since then. Hayek dedicated his book famously to socialists in all parties, and he was writing when the massive expansion of the state was getting underway in Europe.
That's right.
It happened really because of the war. I mean, we can now see with perspective that the reason that the state started taking over education, healthcare, adopting these colossal tax levels, was because they could get away with things during the contingency of wartime that they'd have never been able to get away with at any other moment. And of course, once the peace had returned, the government didn't rush to give back the powers that it had seized on a supposedly contingent and emergency basis. Now, you guys don't have the excuse of a war to be doing this. You have the excuse of a financial crisis, but that really isn't quite in the same league. And yet, the federal government now is 30% bigger than it was before the last presidential election. It's an amazing statistic.
Well, it's staggering.
The direction in which you guys are going is terribly familiar to me, and the end destination is where the EU has got to now, which is bankruptcy, the money runs out, and there is a kind of social unrest as people realize that they can no longer carry on borrowing and that they're going to have to start living within their means.
Well, very interesting. So let's talk about Europe. Let's talk about some of the bankruptcies. I was going to go down that path with you. Give us your take on the European financial situation right now, brought on by the crisis in Greece. Will the EU rescue the Greek banks? You know, where's the money going to come from to rescue this? How can the EU, with its common monetary policy but separate fiscal policy, how can they survive this? I don't see it.
Well, they can survive it by making their peoples an awful lot poorer. What we have in Europe is a debt crisis, fundamentally.
Right.
And the EU's solution has been more debt, pushing these liabilities onto Greece, Portugal, Ireland, you know, forcing new high-interest loans onto countries that couldn't meet their existing liabilities. As you correctly say, they were trying to jam different, disparate economies into a common monetary policy. Their solution, instead of saying, yeah, that was a mistake, is to say, well, let's do it even more. Let's have an even more united European economy. You know, fiscal federalism, European economic governance, and so on. This is more of the medicine that made the patient ill in the first place. And it is going to end very, very badly and very soon. If I had to stick my neck out and make a prediction, I think we are within a month of a major default in Greece. And when I say a major default, I don't mean a technical rescheduling of interest payments. They're just going to say, you know what, we can't pay, guys, that's it, sorry about it. At that stage, of course, Greece should leave the single currency and start exporting its way back to growth. Unfortunately, that would mean the European political class is admitting they were wrong, and so I think they're going to do the worst possible thing, which is to allow Greece to take the pain of a default without the commensurate gain of a devaluation. I was just about to say that they're prepared to pay any price in order to keep the single currency together. Let me qualify that. They actually are exempt from taxes in their home countries because they're Eurocrats. They are prepared to inflict a terrible price on their people rather than admit that the single currency was a bad idea.
Well, now, what does the vote in Slovakia yesterday tell us? They voted to say no more when it comes to helping out Greece. Of course, there was a change in government immediately after that vote was taken. Doesn't that show some signs of hope that people will come to their senses, Daniel?
I mean, it's wonderful that representative government works in at least one country in Europe. In 16 other members of the Eurozone, politicians totally ignored what their constituents wanted, completely disregarded public opinion, and opened their wallets, or opened their their taxpayers' wallets on their behalf. Slovakia was the only place that said, do you know what? We should not be punished for having run a surplus in order to reward somebody else for having run a deficit. And what's more, we do not believe that you cure a debt crisis with more debt. So, wonderful day for Slovakia. I mean, sadly, it's not going to last. I'm sure they will cave in because these countries always do when the EU leans on them. But what a glorious couple of days to imagine that at least somewhere in Europe people were living in a free democracy. And even if the Eurocrats end up getting their bailout, what a nice thing to see them given a proper slap across the chops by one sovereign parliament.
My guest is Daniel Hannan, author of the book, The New Road to Serfdom, A Letter of Warning to America. And now, Daniel, I want to bring it back to the book, if we can, for just a moment. Differentiate for us between socialism and social democracy, the kind of democracy that Europeans believe that they have.
Well, I mean, I think socialism is out of fashion in Europe, as in North America, in the sense that very few people now want the state to run the whole economy. What the leaders of the center-left have learned since the 1990s, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, is that you don't need to own a company to tell it what to do. And you can get to the same center-left outcomes with regulation. You have to do the following in the name of the environment or in the name of anti-discrimination or positive, you know, affirmative action or, you know, equality between the sexes or whatever it is. It's much cheaper for you as the government, instead of actually bothering to own the thing, just to tell it what to do. And we've seen an awful lot of that on both sides of the Atlantic since the the credit crunch hit, you know, even down to rules on what a private company is allowed to pay its own employees. It's a softer thing than proper Marxist economics, but in some ways it's even more dangerous because it ends up having owning the company is relatively straightforward. Creating a monstrous regulatory machine in order to get to the outcomes you want is a remarkably expensive, complex, and difficult thing which requires a bigger and bigger bureaucracy to administer.
And that is why we see the United States government bloated by 30% since the last election. My guest is Daniel Hannan. Daniel, we do something on this show called a quick fire where I just give you a couple of instances and I ask you to give me your top of mind response to them. In today's quick fire, we're going to talk about the following legislation under the Obama administration. And the first is Health Care for All Americans, commonly known as Obamacare. What are your thoughts on that?
Been there, done that, don't repeat it.
Well, now you are British by birth, and obviously your accent gives that away. What is the socialized medicine like in Great Britain today?
Well, you know, there was a statistical analysis of outcomes in Britain compared to other countries. And we are not quite the worst in the developed world, but we are lagging very badly behind the average. And this is in measurable things, the kind of really straightforward empirical things that you can just look at. You know, what are your chances of survival if you get a heart attack? What are your chances of survival if you get a stroke or if you get cancer? You know, after 1 year, or 2 years, after 5 years, how likely are you to be alive? And on those measures, Britain, okay, we're not the worst in the world, but we are way, way below some countries that you would expect, you know, that you would not want to be compared with. And the reason for this is the state has a monopoly on healthcare, and the government is not very good at doing things. Just as governments were not very good at running airlines or building automobiles or installing telephones, so they are not terribly good at running hospitals. In most of continental Europe, there is a mixed system where you have public and private provision alongside each other. We, at the height of the Second World War, when the state power was at its apogee, indeed when Hayek wrote his original rota system, we took this crazy decision to nationalize everything and give the state a monopoly from which only a tiny number of very, very wealthy individuals can opt out. And I'm afraid that that's been our burden ever since. And the worst of it is people become so accustomed to this that eventually they become unable to conceive of an alternative. And I have to say, my views are now a minority in the UK, largely because most people in Britain have been convinced that in every other country in the world, you are denied healthcare if you can't afford it. Hmm. Now, this is not true. It's observably not true. I'm talking to you from Belgium. I've lived in other countries, and I know that that's not the case. But that's how easily people can get frightened away from change. And so if you're going to go down this path, you'd better be clear about where it ends. Don't imagine that you can try out this Obamacare thing, and then a couple of years down the line, if it doesn't work out, you can just reverse it. That isn't our experience. Once you've started down this road, it's very difficult to turn off it.
Well, let me ask a follow-on question, if I can, Daniel, about that, because Obamacare was presented to the United States people as a way to control the rising health care costs that were rising more rapidly than inflation. Has that been the case in Great Britain? Are health care costs more in line as a result of socialized medicine?
Healthcare, well, the amount of spending on healthcare has risen enormously since 1999. It's very, very difficult once the government becomes responsible for healthcare to say no to any increase because, you know, otherwise you, the minister, are responsible for every failure in the system. And, I mean, morally, let alone politically, that is a very awkward position. So our last general election was fought after the credit crunch, after the financial crisis had hit. All the parties went into the election saying, we are going to have to find ways to cut spending. But all the parties tacked on an exemption saying, we're going to carry on spending more on healthcare because that is now what the political culture demands. Having said that, I think there are loads of things that you guys could do to bring down costs in healthcare, particularly a lot of the costs that relate to the litigation and the need for insurance. But that reform should be done within the spirit of the Constitution, respecting the sovereignty of the 50 states and respecting the freedom of the individual. The one thing that is certain to be more remote and more expensive than a big remote insurance company is the federal government.
So true. My guest is Daniel Hannan, author of the book, The New Road to Serfdom. Daniel, continuing on with our quickfire, the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Bill. Your thoughts on that?
Well, look, this is not my field of expertise. Ah. It's not really up to me. That was settled at Yorktown. But I think that I think that you are finding the wrong villain. The problem with the bank nationalization and what happened with the bailout was not really something to blame the banks for. It's something to blame the government for. I mean, yes, some very wealthy people were bailed out at the expense of the taxpayer, and yes, that is wrong. I mean, that was an abominable thing. But the people you should blame are the people who decreed the bailout, not the guys who accepted them. I mean, if they're handed this money on a plate, they're going to take it. What was outrageous was the errors of the politicians that led to this thing happening.
Well, very sound advice. My guest is Daniel Hannan, author of the new book, The New Road to Serfdom, A Letter of Warning to the United States. Daniel, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you and learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I have a daily blog hosted by the Daily Telegraph. You can find it at www.hannan.co.uk, HANNAN.co.uk.
Hannan.co.uk. Daniel, thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to be our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much, Billy.
Thank you.